Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the AnimeBuoy.org Anime Fan Podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussion that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is February 28th, 2016, and this is Episode 10, Macross Plus. Welcome, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to the Anime Buoy Recommendation and Discussion Podcast, where we talk about our favorite anime and hope to open your eyes to some classics that you might have missed, and shine a light on some modern shows that maybe aren't getting as much love as we feel they should be. This week, we're talking about Macross Plus, but first, we have a few news bits. So buckle in and get ready for that. Slaggy, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, our first piece of news bits comes from Anime News Network, which is pretty much the definitive network for anime news. And we have word that Made in Japan is licensed Deno Coil anime, which was originally from 2007. It'll be coming to North America on Blu-ray and DVD on June 28th with an English dub.
Yeah, Deno Coil is fantastic. It's a lot of people have described it as like Serial Experiments Lane for the 2000s. I would largely agree with that. It's not exactly the same, but there are a lot of similarities. It basically involves sort of what life could be like once we're all wearing AR style gear all the time. We all have heads up displays feeding us information at all times, and what interacting with the world like that might be like.
And that's a hot trend in anime these days, so this is a little ahead of the curve.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, 9 years ago, it won a ton of awards in its original release. So this is really exciting news. It's a really fantastic show that I highly recommend. And now that it will be getting an official release in North America, we are definitely going to be doing a Deno Coil episode.
Excellent.
I have fan subs. We may get to it before it comes out, but otherwise, you know, we'll wait for the release and do it then. We'll just have to see how our schedule shakes out.
Indeed.
This other piece of news is one that is super exciting. It's another show that we have been wanting to talk about here on the air, but since it's long out of print and extremely pricey to get a hold of, it didn't feel necessarily appropriate to talk about it. Saigi, do you want to tell our listeners what show is coming back?
Yeah, so Funimation is going to be bringing back The Vision of Escaflowne, and it's going to be releasing a director's cut on Blu-ray in HD, including some new scenes that were added for the Japanese HD release. So they're actually going to be doing a Kickstarter campaign as a way to gauge interest, and so it's interesting, over on Anime News Network, which we'll link you to on AnimeBuoy.org.
AnimeBuoy.org.
There's a good interview with two members of Funimation. And
Lauren Moore and Jennifer Fu.
Yes. And so it kind of sheds a little light on why they chose to do a Kickstarter, even though, you know, they're Funimation and Escaflowne is a pretty high-profile show. So
the reason for this Kickstarter, as far as we understand it, is that basically the HD release of Escaflowne in Japan had a series of new sequences, many of which do in fact have dialogue. So, you know, these are all new story elements in Escaflowne that most of us in North America have never seen, even those of us that are fan sub savvy. So this material has never been dubbed. At this point, getting the voice cast together to dub that stuff is just not going to happen. It's been too many years. So they're basically trying to raise a goal of $150,000 to show the Japanese licensors that there is interest in a new dub for all of this material. And something that's really cool is, assuming this Kickstarter does pass, the limited edition Kickstarter version of the Blu-ray discs will come with a DVD of the original versions of the episodes with the old dub. So this will be like a definitive, like archival type release, potentially. That's really exciting to me. And something else exciting to me is, if the Kickstarter is not successful, they will still be releasing the HD director's cut on Blu-ray, but in that case, it will be a subtitle only release. So
it's a win-win.
Yeah, it's a win-win here. We're definitely getting Escaflowne back, and we may end up with, you know, a definitive collection Escaflowne, and I think that would be fantastic.
I think it'd be really interesting to see a well-done dub.
Yeah, right? I'm so used to Hitomi!
And it's weird for me
Fun!
In 2016 to be saying, oh, you know, if Funimation does it, it's gonna be a well-done dub.
Yeah, but, you know, that's the world
we live in. The Dragon Ball people, that's the world we're living in, folks.
Alright, well, let's get this moving. Let's talk about Macross Plus. Macross Plus is one of my favorite anime of all time. So there are two things that I want to touch on before we discuss it, though. And the first is, what is Macross? Macross, obviously, is the name of a anime series that ran in Japan back in 1982, specifically called Super Dimension Fortress Macross, or Chojiku Yosai Macrossu. You know, it was an anime television series depicted a love triangle against a backdrop of great battles during the first alien-human war. Something that's really cool, you know, obviously, it is a giant robot series. We've been talking about a lot of giant robots lately, but something that's really cool about Macross is that there's a very strong focus on, like, music and sort of, like, the human experience, how we relate to each other, including through music, but also, you know, just how we communicate with one another. So, you know, a lot of themes that are very universal, and this is actually made super explicit in the original Macross, where the music is almost weaponized. And that's something that's actually really kept up with further iterations of the Macross franchise. As a result, there's always a huge focus on fantastic music, on, you know, really awesome and catchy vocal songs that, you know, maybe you don't often get in some TV series, especially in 82, getting all of these image songs that had, you know, fantastic vocal tracks. You just didn't necessarily see it a whole lot. So it's really cool. Obviously, you know, there's a real focus on, like, wartime romance and the cost of war, which are things that feature in a lot of giant robot shows. In fact, Slaggy was talking to me the other day. He was asking, you know, a lot of the giant robot shows we've watched for Anime Buoy have had, like, a really strong human element. They weren't just pew, 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 zap, 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 dead, dead, dead. And, you know, it really brought to mind for me that, you know, a lot of people who don't watch these kinds of programs, I think, lose the fact that at their core, all of the great giant robot series after, like, the Go Nagai super robot stuff of the 60s and 70s, all of the more modern-ish stuff, even looking back at the late 70s, you know, First Gundam, at the core of most of these shows are very human, relatable experiences that I absolutely think are worth watching. I don't think that a giant robot anime is just something that you should throw a series out over. Like, a lot of these shows have real substance. So, having talked a little bit about Macross and giant robots, the other thing about Macross Plus that needs to be pointed out, this was originally released in Japan. The original four-episode OVA was released in Japan in 1994. There is also a film adaptation that was released in Japan in 1995. Now, I say a film adaptation because that's how we often think about it, but the film was actually originally written as a film and then split up for the OVA releases. So, a lot of the discussion we're going to have here is probably going to be more centric on the movie edition, but amusingly, the easiest version to watch in North America, for free at least, is the OVA, because that is actually streaming on Hulu.
It is.
The movie edition is, in North America, released subtitle only. It is on a DVD. I actually thought it was out of print, but then I loaded up Amazon, and they have, through Prime shipping themselves, for $9.99 copies of the movie edition, so I feel like it can't possibly be out of print if that's the price of it.
Interesting.
So, definitely, you know, this is content that's still pretty easy to access. Fantastic show. We're gonna talk right now about who made it, and I think you're gonna find that a lot of these names of these creative
folks
are people that you're absolutely familiar with, and in my opinion, several of them did the best work of their careers on this feature. So, Sayu, do you want to talk a little bit about the writer of Macross Plus?
Yes, the writer of Macross Plus was Keiko Nobumoto-san, and she wrote the screenplay for Cowboy Bebop. She was the creator of Wolf's Rain, which, you know, was pretty well received quite a few years back.
Yeah, she wrote the screenplay for Tokyo Godfathers, which is obviously very well loved.
And she still works with Watanabe-san to this day. She also had done Samurai Champloo, but she most recently did Space Dandy with him. So
indeed, and in fact, you know, she's actually credited in the Kingdom Hearts series of games as scenario supervisor. So,
oh wow,
yeah, she's someone who you're definitely familiar with her work, and if you're listening to this show, you're probably a fan of her work. It was directed by Shoji Kawamori-san. He is probably best known in the English anime fandom for his work doing the
Macross.
Well, on the original Macross, but also his work on Escaflowne, which he did mechanical design and direction work on as well. So, you know, definitely a big fan of Shoji Kawamori-san. He did design work on the original Transformers Generation 1 toys, which obviously is super
cool. Oh, that's
cool.
I never knew that about him.
Yeah. And he has done work on various points on, like, he did a script for Cowboy Bebop. He did Raxaphon. He designed some of the ships in Outlaw Star. He did did mecha design for Mobile Suit Gundam 0083, Stardust Memory, the Pat Labor films, Earth Maiden Arjuna. He directed Spring and Chaos. He did a lot of work on the video game series Armored Core.
Oh.
Yeah, so again, you know, Shoji Kawamori-san is a superstar of mechanical design. Obviously, you know, this was also, Macross Plus was also co-directed by Shinichiro Watanabe-san, who at this point, I think, practically needs no introduction. Best probably known for directing Cowboy Bebop, Samurai Champloo, Kids on the Slope, Lupin the Third, Woman Called Fujiko Mine. So yeah, just again, an amazing, amazing creative staff. And, you know, sort of the real superstar of Macross Plus on a creative side. Saigi, do you want to tell our listeners about?
Yeah,
again?
Of course. That's Yoko Kano-san, who, if that name sounds familiar and you're not super into anime or, you know, you're just learning about it, we did mention her extensively in our Cowboy Bebop episode. I mean, she's just a hugely, hugely influential composer in the anime and video game and even, like, live action film. She, of course, did Cowboy Bebop, Vision of Escaflowne, Wolf's Rain as well, Kids on the Slope, along with Watanabe-san. So she definitely has partnered up with both Watanabe-san and Kawamori-san on multiple occasions.
Indeed. Well, let's talk a little bit more. Now that we've talked about where it came from,
brilliant
let's talk
people.
Right? Let's talk about the show itself. Slaggy, so you, as I understand it, had never seen this.
I had never.
Before watching it for the show. What did you think?
I loved it. I mean, I can see why it's so iconic and why it's so legendary, so to speak.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was really groundbreaking when it was released in 94 in Japan. It was really groundbreaking for fusing traditional cell animation and computer-generated animation.
Yeah, I noticed that. It was pretty forward-thinking in that regard.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, if not for the fact that it's in, like, a 4:3 screen ratio, then you otherwise would not think the show is more than 20 years old watching it now. It's beautifully animated. Some of the CGI it looks a little jank, but it still doesn't have like that cheap look.
The scenes in which it was used were appropriate, like when they're going into like warp drive or whatever, like that worked for me.
Well, and you know, this is the big Pokemon 20th anniversary weekend, and we watched one of the Pokemon movies last night, and it had some CGI, and this was one of the XY movies, so it was made in the last 5 years, and the CGI in that was much worse than the CGI present in Macross Plus.
Yes.
Would you agree with that statement?
Yes.
So again, you know, it's actually aged really well. Obviously, you know, it's fantastic. The general plot of the film, and you know, I don't want to give too much away, but there are three main characters: Myung Fang Lone, Isamu Dyson, and Gold Goa Bowman. Isamu and Gold are both military test pilots and former childhood friends who were in kind of a romantic triangle with Myung, who is a singer. And you know, this is where
this sounds like a parallel to original Macross.
Well, exactly. You know, this is where, you know, the musical element of Macross Plus comes in. Except they actually find out, to the surprise of both Isamu and Gold, that Myung has given up singing and is instead producing the music of a virtuoid hologram idol, Sharon Apple.
And this was 1994, let's just remember. So
yeah, this was Hatsune Miku 15 years before Hatsune Miku. So
that's something that stood out to me. I was like, wow, this really foretold the whole trend of like Hatsune Miku, like her kind of rise to stardom.
Absolutely. In fact, if you want to take it to like a real sci-fi nerd place, this is the kind of work that was really formative in the writings of William Gibson, who wrote Idoru a few years after this. And in fact, I believe he has himself commented that the titular idol of Idoru was inspired by anime such as Macross Plus.
That's awesome.
So definitely a super forward-thinking sci-fi concepts. Sharon Apple, you know, she is not only is she a hologram, but she's presented as an AI hologram that can think and feel for itself. Over time, it becomes apparent, though, the emotion programming is not finished on Sharon Apple and is actually being projected from Myung's emotional core mentally. And as a result, the emotions of Myung and the emotions that are stirred up upon seeing childhood friends Isamu and Gold end up up getting swept up into Sharon Apple's programming and being torn in these multiple directions starts to tear both Myung and Sharon Apple apart. Obviously, this being a giant robot anime, this does lead to characters having reasons to, you know, shoot each other and have really cool, awesome flying space battles in their giant transforming mecha. But that's really, those set pieces are really there to punctuate the very human core of each character conflict. The conflict between Isamu and Gold as they compete for the affections of Myung. You know, obviously Myung, by proxy through Sharon Apple, is basically attempting to seduce everybody, but most specifically Isamu and Gold, usually to disastrous effect.
That was really well put.
Well, you know, Macross Plus is a series I think I've thought about a lot over the years. I really do think it is like a masterwork of the anime medium. To me, it's one of those shows that if someone isn't adverse to giant robots, then to me, it's like, you need to watch this to understand why this medium can tell stories in a way that no other medium can, I feel.
Yeah.
So having gone over a little bit of the basic plot, we obviously don't want to talk about how things do or do not resolve. I don't want to spoil this for you because in reality, I want all of you out there to watch this. So Sayagi, I'd like you to talk a little bit about what you felt were like the driving themes of the piece.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely hit on, you know, the idea of human relationships and, you know, just also kind of identity, like, you know, and how you present your identity. Because, you know, you have these two pilots who, Isamu is very, like, kind of playful and not really taken seriously when they're trying to compete for this government contract. And Gold is very like, oh, you know, we're going to get this contract. But then, you know, they're also presenting themselves in different ways in interacting with Myung. And then, you know, she is presenting herself, you know, in one way as Sharon Apple. You know, she's literally projecting her emotions to be enjoyed by other people, but then she is unable to project her emotions to the two men that she is struggling to deal with her feelings about.
That's a really great point, and one that I actually was not even going to mention here, but you're absolutely right in that one of the core themes of Macross Plus is really that sort of realization of self and how we present ourselves to the people around us, both for our own good, but also to our own detriment. You know, sort of the pluses and minuses of that. Whereas someone like Isamu is never gotten down by the people around him because of how he presents himself to the world. Myung is very vulnerable to the thoughts and feelings of those around her. And I think that, you know, it's a really interesting juxtaposition, the way these various characters are sort of aligned and played against each other and played toward each other, you know, in turn throughout the piece.
And, you know, something else that's kind of really neat is that with the whole Sharon Apple plot going through the entire film slash OVA, I mean, you get that also that little bit of commentary about, you know, the whole idea of popular music and, you know, using sex to sell. And I mean, to the point where, and, you know, the thing that's really kind of interesting about that is like when you see the Sharon Apple concerts, there's, you know, two main concerts in the film that are portrayed. And most people are seeing like basically hypnotized, like almost drugged in a way, like, or like kind of like in a trance or however you might want to describe it. But when particularly Isamu is the way that he is affected by Sharon Apple's music is a lot different. I mean, to the point where when he first hears an audio advertisement on like a holographic billboard for Sharon Apple's concert, he's like, that sounds like an old friend of mine, because it actually was.
Yeah, in fact, he's dismissive. He hears through sort of the artifice and recognizes it as like, oh, this is like an overproduced knockoff of what my friend used to do. And, you know, of course, it turns out that that's exactly what it is. In fact, you know, it's ultimately played up for romantic purpose when it's sort of discussed within the narrative that, like, you know, he was able to pick Myung's voice out of Sharon Apple because ultimately she was the authentic core beneath the artifice.
Right, and it's really interesting. There's the first concert that we see in the film, which actually it happens a little faster than in the OVA.
Yeah, in the OVA, it takes a while, but in the film, it's in, what, like 5 or 10 minutes in?
Yeah, and, you know, there's a point where the projection of Sharon Apple is, like, basically projected onto him, seducing, despite one of Isamu's new military buddies who's working on the mechanical stuff for one of the Macross robots.
And, you know, just to be clear, there are two primary robots in Macross Plus, the YF-19 and the YF-21. If you're familiar with Macross or Robotech as it was originally brought to North America, obviously, you know, these are very advanced models from what were present in the original Macross series, but they are beautifully designed mecha. These are probably my two favorite giant robot designs I've ever seen even
planes.
Today. What was that?
They turn into planes.
Well, yeah, because they're giant robots and they turn into planes. It's like a whole thing, these transformable giant robots in Macross. I just wanted to remark that these robots are beautifully designed. I have multiple models of both of them.
Yeah, they are very cool robots.
So with those, you've discussed that those themes were, you know, really, to you at least, important to the core of the series. I'd like to know ultimately what your what moments stuck out to you in this piece. Like, what moments did really have an impact for you?
I mean, the thing, and I think that it really stood out in the film version because, you know, the OVA had a lot more drawn out mecha battles, which was cool. Like, I mean, they were really well done action sequences, but the way that scenes, like whether they're presented in different order or they're shortened or whatsoever, or recontextualized in the film, really focuses, it's more of a story about this relationship between these three people. And I mean, so it's not really directly answering your question, but just that there were so many of those moments where it's relying more on, you know, their interaction or the tension between the characters rather than, oh, giant robots, you know? Like, I'm not saying that to be dismissive of giant robots, but it really made me think about, oh, well, what is a giant robot? That's why we kind of had that, what is a mecha anime really about?
Yeah, absolutely.
It made me realize that, yeah, I guess these themes are a lot more present in giant robot mecha anime than we, you know, I had really reflected on.
Absolutely. You know, something I think a lot of people don't give enough credit to is even in like old Gundam from the 70s, 0079. Like, you know, there's certainly the element of the series was designed to sell toys, which is why we have some of the weird like Gundam side spaceships and stuff. But at its core, Gundam 0079 is about Amuro Ray's ability or inability to meet his father's expectations of him.
Wait, Shinji?
And his own sort of internal battle as to whether or not he can meet his father's expectations without violating his own moral code of conduct. And, you know, it particularly was relevant in a post-war economy and just really a lot going on in Gundam. And I feel like that's also true in Macross. And I think because Macross was a little older due to when it was made, for our generation, it was maybe a little hard to connect to a lot of the themes of original Macross. But you look at Macross Plus, and everyone I know who I've watched Macross Plus with has immensely enjoyed it and gotten so much out of it, because at its core, it really is about these things we're talking about, you know, identity, how we relate, how we communicate, the role of music in our lives, and the way we're impacted by distractions.
Yeah, so, in terms of specific moments, I loved the two different Sharon Apple concerts and how different they were and how tonally different and how what we knew about Sharon at each point, how that impacted
how we see these performances.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Macross Plus, I obviously think is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Let's be
and
clear.
In the film version, I was really struck about how there were a couple moments at the end that are not in the OVA that really is like, wow, that really needed to be in the OVA. How was that not there?
Well, and those scenes you're talking about, the dialogue scenes, right?
Yes.
Like, those scenes for me are like the period at the end of the sentence that is the movie, or the end of the paragraph that is the movie. Like, without those dialogue sequences punctuating what you just saw and giving them context, it ultimately ends, you know, it's not a matter of the fact that it ends with like a little bit open, because I'm certainly fine with allowing viewers to draw their own conclusions, but it just seems inorganic not to have a response from the characters given the actual events that occur.
Yeah.
So, obviously, that having been said, I want to take just a brief moment to talk about the music in particular. You know, moment that sticks with me is tied to the music. There's a vocal piece that's sung throughout the movie and throughout the OVA called Voices.
Yes.
And this is a song that within the fiction, within the narrative, is a vocal piece that is sung by Myung as a child, and ultimately when she comes back to singing it within the narrative, it's just her singing alone, and it's actually played in a stripped down version of the song that has no instrumentals, because there are no instruments when this is happening in the movie. And ultimately her singing allows her to connect to one of the other characters and overcome what turns out to be the villain of the piece. And it just, to me, the way they presented that song stripped down down and the way it has an emotional impact, to me, it really represents the way that, you know, it's like Morrissey of the Smiths and, you know, singing about the songs that saved your life. It just, music can have such a tremendous impact on us. And I love the way that they represented, you know, the character Isamu being touched by Myung's childhood song and sort of everything that it symbolized for her returning to herself and having faith and confidence in herself and her own creation again. So that for me really is a standout moment of the piece and, you know, brings us to talking about the fantastic arrangement of the music on this soundtrack. Yoko Kanno, to me, you know, we're talking about an amazing world-class, incredibly talented songwriter and musician. This to me is actually her best work. I feel that her work on Macross Plus is better than even her work on Cowboy Bebop or Kids on a Slope.
Or Escaflowne.
Or Escaflowne. Though, yeah. Again, you can see roots of everything she would go on to do within her score here on Macross Plus.
I mean, even when I heard first heard voices, I was like, Escaflowne.
Yeah, because the full instrumental version definitely does hit a lot of those deep chant and, you know, like a spiritual experience kind of sound.
Someone for, you know, and I heard Captain Spike make this statement before that, like, oh, yeah, this is, I think, her best work. And I was like, really? Better than Escaflowne? I think for me, it was really interesting to hear. I mean, there are a couple of songs that, you know, maybe share a little bit of DNA with what, like you said, she later wanted to do, but it's a very overall a different style, you know, because she did a lot of, you know, of like more like electronic-y stuff for the Sharon Apple stuff. So it was really interesting to hear her working in a style that I had not been familiar with, because, you know, the Escaflowne soundtrack, when we eventually talk about it, you know, it's very like a lot of, you know, acoustic instruments. Cowboy Bebop's obviously very jazz influenced. Kids on the Slope also jazz influenced. So really interesting to hear her doing this style that
is more electronic and pop.
Yeah,
but I mean, she absolutely sells it. I mean, it does not at all sound like, oh, this is like outside of the norm for this creator. Like, she sounds absolutely comfortable, and I think puts together some really incredible songs.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's worth mentioning there were like three different soundtrack releases in Japan, and one of them was in fact just released as a Sharon Apple record. That record was called Cream Puff, and it was credited to just by Sharon Apple. And that's actually, it's a fantastic record, absolutely worth picking up if you get into the music of Macross Plus. I highly recommend it. So overall, Sayagi, and I want to start wrapping this up. What did you think of Macross Plus? Would you recommend it to friends? Would you watch it again?
Yeah, it's probably, of everything we've watched so far, one of the most highly recommended of all of the things we've watched and discussed on this show.
Wow, so that's really high praise. I didn't, funny enough, I actually had some amount of reservation and trepidation toward the idea of having you watch this. You know, I've talked about this show to you for 10 plus years, but, you know, in reality, I appreciate that a lot of people they're scared off of Macross and Macross Plus because of the giant robot angle. What would you say to people who have trepidation to watching Macross Plus because of the giant robot angle?
I was gonna say open your mind, but like, I didn't mean that to be like dismissive, but like I, what I mean by that is, you know, if you're willing to try and, like, if you're willing to look for what is beyond the giant robots, I mean, there's really a great story to be told.
Excellent, excellent. All right. Obviously, this comes from me at the highest of recommendations, absolutely. Big fan, one of my all-time favorites, and has been for 20 years now, so I can't imagine feeling so strongly about any other show, basically. So this comes with the highest recommendation from us here at AnimeBuoy.org.
AnimeBuoy.org.
And it's time to discuss real quick where people can watch it. We already mentioned this, but the movie version is available on DVD, subtitle only, no dub, very similar to the Escaflowne situation. In fact, the movie version has footage that has never been dubbed into English before, and rather than doing a new release and a brand new dub, they just ended up going with the sub-only release. You can find that online for under $10. OVA is available dub-only for streaming on Hulu.
And if this is something that's a selling point to you, Bryan Cranston was the voice of Osamu.
Yep, that is true.
And funny enough, he was also one of the characters in Onamis as well, that we talked about.
Yep, yeah,
always forget that he got his start like doing anime dubs before.
Yeah, well, he was doing anime voiceover work even when he was on like Malcolm in the Middle and stuff, back before he was on Breaking Bad, obviously.
Right.
So, all right, well, let's talk a little bit about what we've been watching.
I said, hey, what's going on?
Let's see. Oh, man. I have been watching a lot of anime lately. One of the series that I've been really enjoying is called Senyu. It's a really funny series. So it's like the episodes are short episodes. Each one is like 3 to 5 minutes long.
Oh, that's just for me.
Yeah, it's up on Crunchyroll, subtitled. And it's basically about like a main character of an RPG and his like party of characters going up against like a 1,000-year-old demon king. So it's just like a very like 2013 take on like 8-bit JRPG tropes.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, it's played for comedy. It's super fun. It's sometimes a little irritating that the episodes are so short, but that really shows you that like it's a fun show, and once you start watching, you don't want it to be over so fast. So I've really been enjoying that. I continue to work on catching up on Osomatsu-san, which I'm really enjoying.
People are really starting to into that.
Erased, I've started showing to other people because it's at the point now where it's like, okay, this is doing well enough that it's going to be worth watching. And
yeah,
it is
Kotaku
absolutely
talks about him quite a bit.
Pardon?
Kotaku talks about that show quite a bit.
Oh yeah, it's super good. I've also been watching a lot of Pokemon stuff in the last week, so because, you know, big deal for Pokemon's 20th anniversary and all that.
Oh yeah, some of those like Pikachu's vacation themes are actually really cute.
Super cute.
Like when you take Ash out of the equation, it's kind of like, oh, this is more enjoyable.
Right? Well, what about you? What have you been watching, Slaggy?
So aside from what you've mentioned, and obviously, you know, Macross Plus, but we just discussed that. So I actually decided on a whim to watch a couple episodes of Yo-Kai Watch, and the only way that I've been able to do that here is dubbed, but I was actually really surprised because, I mean, yes, it is clearly a show meant for children, but that said, I mean, you know, it's still Yo-Kai Watch, and if you're familiar with the game, you know, I guess it's not super spoiler alert because it's like the first episode and also super early in the game. One of the main yokai, Jibanya, and the cute cat with like the blue ghosty fire tails is a dead cat who got hit by a truck. And even like, so I mean, even in it being a dub done in conjunction with Disney XD or whatever, and you know, meant for kids, there's still a little bit of, I don't want to say darkness, but there's a little bit of a, and I guess
more mature storytelling conceit.
What's that?
A more mature storytelling conceit?
I guess so. It's like it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. And like, you know, it's not meant to be like, I don't know,
levity. Just, there's a certain amount of levity.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's like, I guess you could say a little more mature. Like, I mean, it's like a little spoopy.
Okay.
And like, you know, there's also Dismeralda is another yokai that you come across really early in the game, and it's like, oh, my parents are fighting. So, you know, like, it's not just like super saccharine, super like dumbed down for kids.
Excellent.
And, you know, Whisper's kind of like, ooh. So I mean, it's fun. And then, you know, of course, there's a bunch of fart humor, cheek squeak and stuff, so you know, I'm actually surprised. And I had actually heard that other people who had been tuning in were like, you know, for a kid's show, a kid's dub of the anime, and the fact that they even like dub the original Japanese music, like, that's pretty cool. That's a level of attention that, you know, those of us growing up with Dragon, Rock the Dragon.
Oh, I love these jelly-filled donuts.
Nothing beats a jelly-filled donut. I guess that's the thing, because Yo-Kai Watch is very Japanese. I mean, it's rooted in the yokai, like these mythological monsters and stuff. So I think that's cool that still kind of shines through.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right. Well, in the interest of everyone's time, I think we should wrap this up. Obviously, we'd love to hear from all of you out there in Internet Radio Land.
We have a couple of tweets to catch up on this week.
Oh, do we?
We do.
Then read them.
That's what I'm going to do. So our first tweet that we have here in the queue is from Crystal Ideas, who said, yeah, I think we need to have a gathering. You bring Paradise Kiss and I'll bring the ribs and macaroni and potato salad. And you had replied, ribs, it's on. And I had replied, not lonely and gorging.
Ah, because wordplay, because lonely and gorgeous. I get it.
Thank you. And then our next tweet comes from her husband, Dan Diaz. They are the Game Buoy super couple, and I guess they're becoming the Anime Buoy super couple. He said, thinking of you, and it was a screenshot from, I believe, Xbox One. They have Xbox One, right? Because it looks like the Xbox One dashboard.
I believe so.
And it was, there was a free anime weekend, so that's cool. I missed out on that, but I'd love to hear if any of you tuned into that free anime weekend. And last but certainly not least, especially for you. Our last tweet comes from Monarch Piratica, also known as Sulker. It says, another great episode of AnimeBui.org, boys. This episode reminded me of my love of Nadeshko. That's awesome. Thank you for your feedback, everybody.
Thank you all so much. Obviously, it means a lot to us that y'all take time out of your day to listen to us talk.
Especially about anime.
Especially about anime,
in 2016.
All right. But for those of you, of course, who have seen Macross Plus, we would love to hear from you. Please, by all means, let us know what you think. If you watch it because of this episode, if you like it or hate it, you know, let us know.
Yeah,
we love hearing from you and having a conversation with you.
Yeah, especially if you've seen both versions. We'd be curious to know if you have a preference for the OVA or the anime. So please hit us up. And like we said, we love your feedback. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We appreciate your listenership on Stitcher Radio. We like your Facebook likes, and we fucking love Twitter.
We fucking love Twitter.
And if you want to check us out when you're listening to this, presumably you already know where to find us, but we're over at AnimeBui.org.
AnimeBui.org.
So, you know, we're getting to the point. This is episode 10, and I think our iTunes feed only does, like, the latest 10 episodes, so if you're looking for golden oldies, which is not super
nice
old.
Nice save.
Then you can go over to AnimeBui.org.
AnimeBui.org.
Oh, you can email us at MailBui@AnimeBui.org.
MailBui@AnimeBui.org.
And you can actually mail us at MailBui@GameBui.org because it goes to the same place.
Indeed.
Speaking of GameBui.org, what is that?
So, if you're listening to the show and you want to hear more of us, kind of questioning your judgment, but that's all right. You can go listen to us over at GameBui.org.
GameBui.org.
Your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. As you can tell, that's Slykick and I talking about video games that are a little bit left of center, much like what we do here on AnimeBui.org.
AnimeBui.org also kind of helps you make more sense of the fact that we're called AnimeBui.
Indeed. Of course, I'd also want to shout out to my newer podcast,
shout you out,
which I do with Shane Alenko. This is Ranger Pridecast. Obviously, you know, a lot of crossover in the anime fandom and the Japanese tokusatsu action show fandom. Over there, we take a look at the current season of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and at the Super Sentai Japanese shows upon which they are based.
Speaking of giant robots.
Indeed. So, Slaggy, what about you?
Oh, and those are both shows that you can catch on the Voice of Geeks Network, right?
VogNetwork.com.
VogNetwork.com, a great network. If you are interested in drag queens and hearing me and Captain Spike be catty to each other, which we aren't really as much on this show, so if you want to hear us be kind of throwing shade at each other and at some drag queens, along with Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio and our good friend Delvin, you should check out Reading is Fundamental, the podcast about RuPaul's Drag Race, where we serve tea and talk about everything going on that show. If you're into wrestling, which is kind of, I guess, similar to Drag Race because it's people wearing flamboyant outfits and being over the top, you should check out Tables, Ladders, and Podcasts, which is a professional wrestling podcast for the common man.
All right. Well, with all of that having been said, it's time to wrap this show up. It has been a sincere pleasure to talk to you all out there in Internet Radio Land this lovely Sunday afternoon. I hope you have had half as much fun listening as we've had talking. We'll be back at you shortly with more of our very favorite Under the Radar recommendations. But until then, keep watching, keep thinking, and see you, Space Cowboy.
See you, Sharon Apple.
Oh my gosh, I am so happy that I got through this whole episode without calling Sharon Apple Sharon Needles.
Happy Halloween!